Boker Tov, Shavua Tov, world. Today's daf in Masechet Menachot, brought to you from Yerushalayim, Ir HaKodesh, is daf Chet. And yesterday, we got ourselves up to the Halakha Mishnah, which puts us a bit ahead over here. So remember that the whole last part of this parak is dedicated to the question of what is ma'akev what? This is in any case where the Torah gives us multiple ingredients. How do we relate those ingredients to each other and to the whatever these ingredients are for? So if they're coming for the mincha, how do we relate them to each other and to the heter of the mincha? If they're coming to be matir mitzora, the same question. If they're your arba minim shebelulav, and so on, all of these things we're going to look into, and today we got up to the continuing story. In this case, we're going to look at the menorah. So the menorah has seven different branches, six branches going off to the side, three on either side, and one, of course, is the actual menorah itself, the central part of the menorah, and all of them are ma'akev. So if any one of these, even one of these kanim, are missing, the whole menorah is puzzled. So shiv'a kinea menorah, arma akvim ze etzed. And remember that the kinea menorah were holders for lamps. They were not direct holders for fire. And therefore, into the kinea menorah, on the top of each one of these kanim, there was a place to put in a lamp. That was something else. Those are the nerot. And those Shiva Neirot, which go above what we'll see are the 18 Amos of the Ketvachim of the Menorah, they are also Ma'akvim Ze Etzeh, and we need to have everything if we're going to have anything. Shtei Parshiyot Shebe Mezuzah, Shema V'haya Im Shamoa, are both necessary for the Mezuzah, and if either of them are missing, that Mezuzah is not a Mezuzah. And Afilu Kitav Echad Ma'akva, even one single letter will be ma'akev, the entire mezuzah. Both of those parshas are actually going to be puzzle because we learn out from uchtav tam, kitiva tama. It needs to be complete and whole, and every word needs to be formed precisely as it's meant to be. Arba parshiot shebetfilin, ma'akvin zuat. So the same thing is true of shema v'haya im shamoa, kadesh v'ko b'chor, and v'haya Kitavo, and so on, and that is all ma'akev one another, and there too, even one os of any of these parshiot is ma'akev the entire tefillin. Again, we're going to go into Gemara through the different ways that we learn out ikuva. Remember, ikuva can be through a lashon of havaya, any of the haya words. And it could be because of things like chuka, or like kacha, or like a doubling up when it comes to kachim. Arba tzitziot, the four tzitziot, one on each corner, are ma'akev one another, because they're all considered to be essentially one mitzvah. She'arba tan mitzvah achat, there's no mitzvah to have a single one of those tzitziot. There's a mitzvah of tzitzit on the beged, and the tzitzit on the beged is actually one mitzvah. Whereas Rabbi Shmuel says, no, each one is actually a mitzvah bifnei atzmo, and therefore there's an inyan to have a tzitzit on even one corner of the beged, and that too would be considered to be a mitzvah. So let's take a look at the basis in the pasuk for all of these things. So, in the connection, starting off with the branches of the menorah, and when we say branches, seven branches, we're obviously including the goof of the menorah as if it's one of the kinei ha-menorah. Let's just remember what we know about the menorah by looking at the pasuk. So we've got two places where the Torah describes the menorah. One of them, of course, is in Truma, where we have the mitzvah of the Asiyah, Samanera, together with the mitzvah of the Asiyah, of all of the Kalim of the Mishkan. And over there, what it says is, and if we pay close attention, we'll see all of the diukim that the Gemara is going to bring here. The Asita Minorat Zahav Tahor, Miksha te'aseh menorah yirecha. So the yirecha is a reference to its actual phi. That means the body of the menorah itself. Vikana kiviyeha kaftoreha uferachya mimena yihiyu. So we have the phi of the menorah, and that's going to be the foot that actually extends outward and provides the support for the menorah. And it is separate from the upper part. And there in that upper part, we're going to have, that upper part is the kana, is going to have givi'im, because it uses a minimum lashon of two, givi'eha, which is at least two givi'im, and a givi'a, as we know, is some type of kos yayin type of thing, in which it's elongated, like what we call our bechers in Yiddish. Kaftoreha, that means it's got to be a minimum of two kaftors. What's a kaftor? A kaftor is like a button, or as Rashi says, a pommel, which is an apple shape. So it's going to be a round ball. And pracheha. So it has to have a minimum also of two flowers. So these flowers are going to turn out in the Gemara. All of these things are decorative. And they actually will see that they're not necessarily the same all across the menorah, but we'll take a look at that as we go. And then besides the yirecha and the kana, which is the centerpiece of the menorah, we also have the additional kanim. So we have six kanim yotzim mitzideha. We have six of these extensions, branches that are coming out from the side. Shlosha kinei menorah mitzidah echad, shlosha kinei menorah mitzidah sheni. So that gives us, besides the central branch, which is the kana, it also has six additional branches, and all of this is mimena yihiyu. So the mimena yihiyu is a reference to using a single chunk of metal, and then you bang it out in order to turn it into a menorah, but you don't make it out of pieces, which you then weld together. Shlosha gevi'im meshukadim bakaneh ha'echad, kaftor v'ferach. So it means in every single one of these kanim, you have three of these kosot. They're decorated with inscribed, we call that meshukadim, with inscribed shapes, like the teimani bechers. And that's on each one of these kanes, plus a kaftor, plus a perach. And so what does that mean? It means that each one of these kanim has three givi'im plus one kaftar plus one perak. So that means on the six, forget about the middle, because maybe the middle is different. We'll go back and analyze the middle. But that means that we've got 3 times 6, already 18 of these givim, just on the six kanim, and then we have 6 of these brachim, and we've got 6 of these kaftorim. That's besides the middle. Then, how about the middle itself, the actual goof of the menorah? Well, the menorah itself, uba menorah, arba'a givim, as opposed to the three kanim that we have on each, the three gvi'im that we have on each one of the six kanim that are the branches on the side, when it comes to the menorah itself, we have 4 gvi'im, mishukadim, and we have kaftoreha and piracheha, which is 2, as opposed to the kanim where we only had 1 kaftor and 1 pera, kaftor vafera. So that gives us an additional 4 to the 18 that we had before, and it gives us an additional 2 kaftorim and 2 prachim to the 6 apiece that we had until now. Now, besides that, there is also a kaftor tachat shnei hakanim mimena, the kaftor tachat shnei hakanim mimena, the kaftor tachat shnei hakanim mimena. So we have 3, repetitive, 3 kaftorim, and these kaftorim are on the bottom of the kanim. So in other words, at the point on the body of the menorah that the kanim come out on either side, there is a pommel, as Rashi says, there's a round ball out of which they come. So in other words, the addition is also these kaftorim that are different than the kaftorim that we mentioned before, the kaftoreo prafea. These are part of the structure that has basically four pipes that are coming out of every single one of these kaftorim. There's going to be one pipe in either direction, which is going to be the kanim going up in either direction. And then there's going to be a pipe going up to the next kana, to the next thing on that, either the shtei kanim or even on the top. It's going to be an extension to the top of the middle piece of the menorah. So there's going to be four pieces of metal that are sticking out of each one of these kaftorim, which is not the same as the normal kaftorim. And that is in addition to the kaftorim that we mentioned before. So all of this, kaftoreyem v'uknotam mimena yihiyu. Uh-oh, that's a dangerous word. Mimena yihiyu, well, that's going to tell us ikuva. Because if it's yihiyu, then that means behavayata yihiyeh. It has to be this way, and if you make it any other way, it is going to be possible, which means that every single piece that we just counted, 42 separate pieces, as we'll go back to add it up in the Gemara, is ma'akev. What's more, the fact that it's mimena yihiyu is also ma'akev, because it says here too, kula miksha achat zahav tahar. Wow. Okay. Then let's turn just for a moment to Beha'alotecha and take a look at what information is added there in Beha'alotecha. Even if the only information that's added is the repetition, that would give us a din that it's ma'akev. So there we have the Ze Ma'aseh HaMenorah Miksha. So we have a repetition of the din of Miksha. Zahav, a repetition of the din of Zahav. Ad Yirecha Ad Pircha Mikshahi. Uh-oh, he, that sounds dangerous. Mikshahi seems to mean that you can't get away without its being Miksha. And it also added another Perach over here, because it says that the Yirecha has its own Pircha. So now that means that besides the Prachim on the Kanim to the side, and besides the prachim on the kana of the menorah, the centerpiece of the menorah, there's also a perach that is part of the yerech of the menorah. So that means the base of the menorah itself culminates on top with this flower design, and that's besides the other kaftoreha uferacheha. So that gives us an additional perach on the bottom, besides the other two prachim that went together with the two kaftorim. But this is just the perach all on its own. Okay, that's exciting. I find it exciting anyway. I hope you do.
For some reason, anything with the menorah is delightful.
This is not recording here. Try that again. All right, so those are the psukim. Let's continue on in the circuit. So, my time. Why do we say that we need all sheshet kanim from the sides plus the middle kanim, seven kanim? That's because it says havayah. Well, we said mimena yihiyu, and yihiyu means behavayatam yehu. Okay, let's take a look at the overall construction of the menorah in the Braita Tanurabam. Menorah haita ba'a min ha'eshet. First of all, it's got to be an eshet. An eshet means that it's just a raw block. So it's not it pieces at all. And it has to be a block of gold. And therefore, if you made it out of pieces, so you formed six kanim out of different pieces of gold, and then you welded them together to a central piece, that would be possible completely. And if you made it, however, from other kinds of metals, mishar minei matachot, then it would be kosher. How could that be? Since it says havayah, that we're going to have to take a look now. So yeah, why did you say that minagruta otes psula? If you made it out of separate pieces, it's going to be posel, because you said it says miksha, and it says the lashon of yihiyu, and that means it's ma'akir. But the same thing should be true about making it out of anything besides gold. Sharmine matachot mami. It says zahav, and it says yihiyu. So it's exactly the same pasuk. How is it that the yihiyu only insists that it has to be one piece, but not that it has to be gold. Well, that's because Amakra, that's because the Pusik adds over there, Te'aseh HaMenorah. So what is the Te'aseh? Te'aseh seems to be adding, I mean, obviously, if it's Asita Menorah, there you go. Asita is the Lashon of Asiya. Asita Menorah Tzahavtahar. And then you repeat, Miksha Te'aseh HaMenorah. Just say, Mirecha Kanagmi Avakaftoreh. All you need to put together is Miksha. And that would say it perfectly well. By adding this additional te'aseh, you're including a new asiya, which wasn't included in the havaya that we mentioned previously. So that means other matachot are also included. Hey, now wait a second. I mean, te'aseh is a ribui, and the havaya is a miyud. Now, how do you know that the te'aseh is coming to include other metals, and the Havaya excludes making it from anything but one piece? Maybe it's the other way around. Why not say, Te'aseh is coming l'rabot gruta'ot, so you can have, even if you welded it together, b'diavad, it would also be kosher, and then the Havaya would mean that it absolutely must be made out of gold, right? No, you can't say that. Lo sakar daitav, because the miksha is Havaya, it says that word to you, the you, on the chelek that was referring to the miksha. And therefore, it makes more sense that it would be referring to the miksha. Miksha te'aseh HaMenorah, kaftareh, etc., etc., mimena yiyu. So the yiyu is a reference to the miksha. That means that hammering it out of one piece is fundamental to the its Havaya. Masha'in came, the word Zahav Tahar, which appears before that, that is not affected by the subsequent Yihyu. So there's no way to say that it should be the Miksha that is not covered by the Yihyu. Now, wait a minute. The word Te'aseh is also adding to the Zahav, and it should not only add to the Zahav, but the Miksha Te'aseh is in the expanding the envelope of the miksha. I understand that the EU is closer to the miksha, but so is the te'aseh. I mean, the pasuk reads miksha te'aseh. That was your ribui. Miksha te'aseh, and then mimena yiyu. So that means that the expansion applies more to the miksha than it does to the zahav, for that matter. I mean, if you're looking to whatever's closer to the miksha, so then te'aseh is closer to the miksha. Well, that's true, but the word miksha actually is mentioned twice, and therefore the miksha you can't play with because it's going to be ma'akev. So I'm giving up on the EU. You're right. We've got the EU, and we've got the idea of the te'aseh that definitely undoes that EU in at least one of the cases, either on the zahav or on the miksha. So now, in order to understand which one is going to be ma'akev, let's take a look at the word miksha that occurs twice. Right there, we have the v'asita menorat zahav miksha te'aseh, and then we have kaftareihem uknotam mimena yiyu kula miksha. So we repeat over there, miksha. Therefore, the miksha is doubled. So it must be that the miksha is going to be ma'akev. It says the same thing about the Zahav. I don't understand. It mentioned, and you brought me two psukim, Pasuk Lamed Aleph and Pasuk Lamed Vav, you brought me. And in both of those psukim, it says Miksha and Zahav. What are you trying to pull me around over here with the blindfold in my eyes? I can read. Both psukim repeat Zahav. Both psukim repeat Miksha. So what I'm still back where I started from. You're telling me that te'aseh is close to the miksha, but it's also close to the zahav. So how are we answering which one we know? You seem to have pulled out of a hat that the miksha, that's going to be ma'akev, but the zahav isn't ma'akev. You can make it out of another metal if you want. So explain to me. If it doubled miksha, and that's la'akev, it also doubled zahav, and that's la'akev. Zahav, zahav, nami la'akev. Excuse me, my, it's no comparison. Because you see, if you take my approach and you're going to accept the fact that you can't weld it together, it's a gruta'ot made out of separate pieces, that is definitely possible. But the shar mine matachot, that's okay. So then that would explain, I can explain to you both the fact that it doubled the word zahav and the fact that it doubled the word miksha. I'm going to show you that later. But if you tell me, because that's used for a drasha, which we're going to see later on what that drasha is, but there's definitely a way to make sense of the double language so we can understand the double language of the miksha to be ma'akev, and we can understand the double language of the zahav to tell me another drasha, which I haven't told you yet, okay? But if you're going to tell me that the gruta'ot is not coming to be ma'akev, which means that miksha is not there to say tana lavakasu la'akev. Okay, so then you're going to have to give me a drasha from that word. Well, I don't have any drasha from that word. So therefore, you're going to be stuck. It makes sense, therefore, that it's the way I say miksha is actually a ma'akev, and zahav is coming to tell me a drasha, which I'm going to let you know in a moment. But if you're going to tell me the other way around, if you're going to say that it's pasul from non-zahav, so then mishamine badachor psula, you can't explain the double occurrences of both zahav and miksha, you see? I'll take your word for it if you tell me what the drasha is. Like, what drasha are you referring to? My drasha, Tanya. Kikar zahav tahor ya'aseota kol hakelim ha'ele. So you need to use one gigantic solid piece of gold, which is a kikar, and that means if your bozav, here's the drasha, et kol hakelim ha'ele, if you're going to be using a kikar zahav, you're going to be using zahav, then these dinim apply, and you need the kikar, and we're going to see the other dinim, the kaftorim, the prachim, and so on. We're going to see in a moment. So then if it's coming from zahav, then this whole piece applies. It needs to be kikar tahor for everything I've mentioned above. But if it's not coming from zahav, then all of these special dinim don't apply. And it could weigh more, it could weigh less. There's no din of its being a kikar at all if you're not using that metal gold. Not only that, but since it says also, givi'eha kaftoreha uprachaha, in the context of the doubling of zahav, that also teaches us, if you're making the menorah out of zahav, then these other things, the gvi'im, the kaftorim, the prachim, are necessary. But if you're not making it out of gold, then none of this is applicable. Not only does it not have to be made out of the kikar, but it does not have to be made with vim, kaftorim, and prachim. So look, I mean, if that's the case, it says also the kanim in these psukim. So why don't you say, if you're making it out of gold, then you need to have the branches. But if you don't make it out of gold, it doesn't need any branches. Because, I mean, it's all part of the same pasuk. And, I mean, as far as we know, seven branches are absolutely essential to the menorah. No, I couldn't say that because that doesn't even have the name menorah attached to it. If you just have a single stick, then that's called a pamot. And since the Torah specifically insists on calling this kli a menorah, obviously the kanim are essential. So if the kanim are essential, so then that means that the way it's described, the shisha kanim, yotzi mimena, they are all essential. Now, getting back to the braita. So v'zeh ma'aseh ha-menorah, miksha zahav. Here's the last thing that zahav tells us. The only thing that is ma'akev, this din of miksha, is if it's made out of gold, which of course is a very uniquely soft metal. So if you have gold, then you make it out of miksha. But if it's not made out of gold, then it's not made out of miksha at all. Wow. Okay. So now we've had, remember, two zahavs, and we also have two mikshas, but we've only explained over here one of the zahav. Why do we mention over here again the mikshayim? That's to tell me that the chatzotzrot do not need to be made from one eshet, even though they should be, but they're not ma'akev. And it's actually the opposite when it comes to the chatzotzrot. The metal is ma'akev, but the fact that it needs to be a single eshet of metal is not ma'akev. So by the chatzotzrot, we learned in the Braita chatzotzrot that Moshe made, hayuba'im min ha'eshet u'min ha'kesef. In fact, they were made from a single piece of silver. If you would have made those chatzotzrot from welding pieces together, it would still have been kosher. But if you would have made them out of any other metal besides silver, then they would have been pasul. The exact opposite of what we're saying about the menorah. So why is this? Why are we saying that it has to be made out of dafka silver? I'm assuming that's because it said in the pasuk both words. It said, "Asela chashtei chatzotzrot kesef mikshe taaseh otam v'hayu." V'hayu lachalami kraida means that it's another havaya case, and therefore it's going to be mi'akev. But if that's the case, then it also says miksha. Miksha ta'aseh otam v'hayu lachalam mikra ha'eda. So again, why is the miksha not as central and critical to the making of the chatzotzot as the kesef is? Should be exactly the same. That's because, and here's the explanation of why we needed the second miksha by the menorah. Mi'eid rachmona gabe menorah, miksha yi. Why does it repeat that word he? Dafka, the menorah has to be miksha. He, the lo chatzotzrot. So the menorah was unique. Therefore, if it's made out of its primary metal, which is gold, it demands that it should be mi'eshet echad. Vasheinkein the chatzotzrot, when they're made out of their primary metal, kesev. So in that case, it's not going to be ma'akev. So now this tells us that zahav, zahav, miksha, miksha teaches us everything that we need to know. If you have a menorah at zahav, then you need to have miksha, and that it doesn't have to be zahav. And if it isn't zahav, indeed you don't need miksha. Whew. Okay. Tana Rabbana. Kol ha-kelim sha'asa Moshe. Anything that Moshe Rabbeinu had made with the Mishkan, those kelim are usable throughout all of the dorot. When we move into the Beit HaMikdash, all of those kelim were ksherim lo, uksherim ledorot, except for one thing, and that was the chatzotzrot. The chatzotzrot were only ksherot lo, upsulot ledorot. We did not use those chatzotzrot ever again. In fact, as you know, on the day of Moshe Rabbeinu's death, they were already Nignas because of Ein Shilton B'yom HaMavet, as Rashi brings in the Chumash, and they were already Nignazu B'chayav. Chatzotzrot my timer. So why is it that you say that you cannot use Moshe Rabbeinu's Chatzotzrot? Ilema D'yomakra Aseh Lecha. Is it because Dafka in the mitzvah of the Asiya, it says Aseh Lecha Shtei Chatzotzrot Kes, which means only Lecha. So you'll tell me lecha means lecha v'lo ledorot. I mean, if that's the way you understand the word lecha, you should say the same thing about the Arayin. Lecha v'lo ledorot. Because it says ve'asita lecha, Aron eitz. And obviously we used that Arayin that had been made with Moshe and Bezalel throughout all of the derais. So hachinami lecha v'lo ledorot. I mean, obviously you're not going to tell me that we have to remake the Arayin HaBris after the death of Moshe. So what does it mean there when it says Aseh Lecha? So we had a machlokas in Yuma what that means. One man Yuma says Aseh Lecha. Moshe Rabbeinu had to pay for the Aron. Whew. Boy, that's a killer. All right. So either it means that Aseh Lecha means Mishalcha, you're going to have to pay for it. Or there was another Mandiyamar who said, no, it was also brought from the Truma. But when it says a Selecha, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was saying, you know, if only I could have it that you were the one who made it and you were the one who paid for it, I'd prefer that. Because this special relationship that I have with the Aron HaBriz is a relationship that I have with you. So Mishalcha ani rotzei yoter mishalahem. It has to be that it's Mishal Tzibur. It has to be that it was a chelik of the Kedushas Yisrael. But I cannot say with my full heart, Kaveh Yochel, that I'm really happy with that, because at least there's one guy that I can really trust, and that's you. All right, you know, I'm throwing myself into this too. So fine, we'll make an Aronate, but I want everybody to know it's, I'd rather have his. So, but anyway, if that's the case, so then why would Aseh Lecha on the Chatzotzrot be any different than the Aseh Lecha on the Aron HaBris? We could say the same thing. So that can't be the reason that we don't use Moshe Rabbeinu's Chatzotzrot ever again. Ah, but that's different, because over here, the Chatzotzrot, it says twice Lecha, whereas by the Aron, it only says once. So the Omer Lecha, Lecha trei zimne, aseh lecha, and then at the end of the pasuk it says v'hayu lach. That v'hayu lach is very powerful. These things are defined existentially as yours. So therefore they are only Moshe Rabbeinu's and not to be used by anyone else. Tani Rav Papa, v'rei de Rav Chanin kamei de Rav Yosef. So now, we have a whole discussion over here of what kind of materials you can use in order to make the menorah. So there's a braita, and Rav Papa was saying over this braita, and actually, Rav Yosef did not like this braita, as we're going to see in the end, and he claims that this braita is a big mistake and that we should forget about it. So here's the braita that Rav Papa, brother of Chanin, said over. Menorah haita ba'a mina eshet, so it had to be from one single piece of metal, min hazahav, and it needed to be made out of gold. So far, everything is consistent with our sugya. If you substituted another metal, asa'a shel kesef, it would still be kosher. If you made it, however, out of a cheaper metal, let's say you made it out of ba'atz, you made it out of tin, or you made it out of avar, which is lead, or you made it out of some type of alloyed iron, shel gisteron, which is a mixture of different metallic substances to make a stronger alloy. So what would be the din there? Rabbi Posel, Rabbi holds no. You cannot use cheap metal. And Rabbi Yehuda says you can use any metal you like, including lead. If you made it out of wood, or if you made it out of bone, or if you made it out of glass, then everybody is made that it's possible. That was the braita that Rav Papa had said to Rav Yosef. So Rav Yosef said, I don't understand. Can you explain to me, like, how are you thinking about this? How does that fit into the pasuk that both Rebbe and Rav Yosef Rav Yehuda would agree that it's possible if it's made out of wood? Why is that? Well, the way I understand it, says Rav Papa Baruch Chanin, I understand that this braita is assuming that both Rebbe and Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda utilize the overall approach to the Torah of Klal Prat Uklal. So before we begin this piece, let me just remind you, once again, we've learned many times, the difference between an approach to Kol HaTorah Kula of Klal Prat Uklal and an approach to Kol HaTorah Kula of Ribui Miut Ribui. So if you hold that the Torah is created along the lines of Klal Prat Uklal, and that's your fundamental drasha, which includes Klal Uprat, Prat Uklal. What it means is that the Torah is constructed of sets of ideas, and therefore each set is meant to be the definition of a category, which you then can learn out of the set, which leads to things like anything which is Ke'ein HaPrat, is that which will you'll learn out of a Klal Prat Uklal. So we view the set as the model. Masha Enkein, if you darsh in the Torah with Ribui Miut Ribui, and each one of what you claim is a Klal, is not a set. It is a mention of a broad idea. And then any other details are actually not definitions of that idea in its totality, because that would make it a set that you're defining. Each different piece of information that comes in afterwards that's a prop is there in order to be a specific issue that is meant to be excluded from that overall reboot. But in no way are we coming to define a complete set. That leads to tremendous differences in how it is that we end up understanding the psukim. So let's use this as an example. So Rav Papa, he says, my thinking is that according to this brayta, both Rebbe and Rabbi Yossi Rav Yehuda were learning the pasuk and how to understand the menorah as a klal prat uklal. And therefore, the differences would be, how do I understand the categorization of what the similar to the prat is? So remember, we've got a klal prat uklal, and as we'll see, we're going to darshan the pasuk. And so we've got the first asiya, and then we have that second asiya, teaseh. So the first is klal, asita menorah, that's a klal. And then you define it, zahav, and the whole description of it. And then you say again, taaseh oto. Okay, so now I have a klal, prat or klal. What is the prat all about? Gold. Okay, but since it's a klal, prat or klal, and it doesn't just say make a menorah out of gold, so then it means that it is creating a set of things. What is the set of things whose example is gold? Precious metals, I guess you would say, right? Precious metals. Okay. So if you hold it's precious metals, you're not going to include tin, are you? No. Okay, tin's not a precious metal. And just alloyed iron, you're not going to include that, are you? So therefore, that would be one way of learning it. And the other way of learning it is, depending on how you understand the nature of klal, prat, or klal, now that is a much more complex issue, which, gentlemen, is really quite simple to understand if you think about it. Remember the way that a klal, prat, or klal works. That's important to understand the functionality of klal, prat, or klal. If you only had the klal followed by a prat, what would that be? That would mean that the Torah is telling you, here's my idea. Make a menorah. Okay, menorah. I mean, I could be, make that out of anything. I mean, take a look at the stores. Anything you can imagine making menorah out of is made to make menorah out of, right? Therefore I say, zahav. That would be the end of it. So that would be definitive. I would be giving you the adjective that defines the menorah. The menorah is zahav. That's called klal uprat, ein b'klal ela masher b'prat. The whole point is that it's the way I describe it. It's a simple description that invalidates any other kind of menorah. That would be what happened if it says klal uprat. Now, suppose it would say, take zahav and make a menorah. So then that would be a prat uklal. And that would mean that the klal is basically saying, I'd like you to have zahav, but you know what? Make a menorah. I don't give a hang, really. I mean, as long as you make a menorah, that's important. So then it would be marba everything. Now, if you have a klal prat uklal, the two klalim in their relationship to the prat are contradicting each other. The klal and the prat is limiting things to the prat. The prat and the klal is expanding things to anything. That's why we end up with understanding that this is essentially a balance that defines a set, which is meant to be similar to the zahav, right? That makes perfectly good sense. Now, the question is, if you have a klal prat uklal, what is the central element that is the limud? The first klal or the last klal? That is called klala kama ikar or klala batra ikar. Depending on which one is the one that sends the limud out, so to speak, you get a different balance in understanding the way that the klalim are balanced with the prat. Because if the last klal is the ikar, the last klal is the expander of the envelope. And that would mean take the easiest description of the prat. Now, the easiest description of the prat would be, well, the prat's metal. So any metal would be fine. The more restricted meaning is the prat is precious metal. That would be true if the opening prat, the opening klal is the main relationship to the prat, you see? because then it would be essentially a limitation, pradu klal, but we expand that limited envelope to include more. So any precious metal would be okay. That's basically what the machlokas would be over here. Do I learn, this is what Rav Papa is saying. This way I understood the machlokas between Rebbe and Rebbe Yossi and Rebbe Yehuda. So if you're saying it's got to be gold and not tin, that's because you understand it has to be precious metal. If you're saying it could be any metal, then that's because you hold that the klala batra is the ikar, and it could be any metal at all. So tin, lead, I don't care. As long as you have your table of elements in front of you and you understand what a metal is, that would all be included in the periodic table, metals. Obviously, that would be the klal prater klal. Cute, no? Okay, anyways, so that is the way I understand it, said Rav Yosef, said Rav Papa to Rav Yosef. Said Rav Yosef to Rav Papa, bad news. Very bad news. I would suggest that you take your whole braita and delete it. Because I have a better one, and my better one shows that yours is wrong. Because according to yours, the way you have this braita, nobody agrees that you could make a menorah out of wood. And that's not true. I'm going to show you in my braita that that's not true. Omarlay, I would delete your braita in the presence of my wonderful superior braita, and therefore that will be an end of it. Here's my braita. Tanya, kli sharet sha'asa'an shel eitz. What's the din if you made a menorah or another kli sharet out of wood? Rebbe says, well, that's possible, but Rebbe Yossi Rebbe Yehuda says it's kosher. Aha! Now, what then would this be? Machlokas over here? In this braita, it's explained. But my kamifrei Rebbe is derish klal and prat. So if you do a klal prat or klal, what's the common denominator? It has to be a metal, but it cannot be wood, and it cannot be glass, and it cannot be plastic, so on. Whereas Rebbe Yossi, he's derish ribui and miute, and the braita actually can be easily explained. Here's how to understand it. Rebbe is Darsh Klalu Prat. Okay, let's do it. The Asita Minorat. Stop there. That's a klal. Minorat Zahav Tahar. That's a prat. Mikshate Asa Minorat. Oh, that's another klal. Okay, rule is klal prat or klal. Iata dan eleke ina prat. Just like the prat, here is a metal. Ma prat shel matechet. Zahav is a metal. Af kol shel matechet. Whereas Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda, he darshans it not as a klal prat or klal, in which case they would only be arguing on whether it needs to be a precious metal. They're arguing about whether it needs to be a metal at all, because he learns that it's a garish ribuy miyute. Let's do that. V'asita minorat, stop. That's a ribuy. A minorat, whatever. You didn't say what kind. Then zahav tahor. Oh, well, that's a miyut. And then when you say mikshate asea minorah, that's a riba. What's the rule about a riba miyad riba? So riba miyad riba is riba hakol. Okay, what does that mean? It means what I said. Anything at all. I don't care if it's made out of glass. I don't care if it's made out of wood. Anything at all is fine. So then what was it memayit? It's memayit, the most ridiculous, dissimilar case. But what's that? That's garbage. If you make it out of earthenware, so then it doesn't have any of the milas of the menorah that we were thinking of. That would be good for one thing only. Tel Aviv, you. But what would you make a menorah out of cheres for? So that's what is b'mayah. Miecho cheres. Anyway, so according to my approach, Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda is perfectly okay with a wooden menorah. He doesn't like a keres menorah. Well, says Rav Papa, I say, let's delete your braita in front of my superior braita, and therefore I'm the one that should come out on top over here. Aha! Samedidach bekamedidi. No way, says Rav Yosef. Ridiculous. Don't even think about it. Lo salka daita. Because there's another braita that makes it very clear that if you don't have any gold, so you can't make the menorah, and you need to light the menorah in the Beis HaMikdash. So it says, maybe afshal kesev, shal nechoshet, shal barzel, shal bedil, shal oferet. Now these are all metals. And right there in that braita, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda says, why do you need a metal? He's makshir af b'shel eitz. Make a nice wooden menorah. Who made that beautiful wooden menorah that we had back in California? That was, I think, with Ivan Tashir, no?
No, it was here. It was here. I made it here on our first year.
Oh, you made that beautiful big wooden menorah?
Here, wow. In Eretz Yisrael. We didn't have it in. Remember, okay. I went to Becker, the glass thing that was right across from the mirror, and they blew. I got those big things.
Wow.
And that was all before you finished high school? Rebbe, I had just gotten free from the framing store. I was still under indentured servitude from the wine for the canteen.
I gotcha. Okay, so therefore make a beautiful Mo'willy menorah out of eights. What's wrong with that? And I got another braita that also proves that according to Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda, you can use wood. So your approach and your braita is all wrong. Take a look, here's another braita. We have overwhelming evidence that your braita is simply not accurate. Lo yaseh adam bayit tavnit echal. A person, I mean, unless of course you're a chassidus, that's different, but just a regular guy should not make a building that looks like the Beis HaMikdash and make it his home. Can you imagine if you were allowed to do that, what Rechavia would look like? A series of Bate Mikdashes, one after the other, you know. Oh man, what a neighborhood that would be. So anyway, you're not allowed to make, you're not allowed to make a Beis HaMikdash as your home, and you're not allowed to make an anachsadra the way that the ulam was. You can't put a porch in front of your home that has the midas of the ulam in the Beis HaMikdash. You can't make a chotzer with the shir of the azora. You can't make a shulchan for your home that looks like the shulchan in the Beis HaMikdash. You cannot make a menorah for your home that looks like the menorah in the Beis HaMikdash. But you can make a candelabra, and it could have 5 branches or 6 branches or 8 branches, whatever you want, as long as they don't have 7. Because the one in the Beis HaMikdash, as we just learned, had 7 branches. You can't use any metal. And Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda says, forget about metal. You can't make it out of wood. Because after all, I mean, the Beit Hashmonai, they made their menorah when they were very poor, right after the Nes of Hanukkah. They didn't have any zahav. And the first menorah that was made that year, after the Greeks had made so much trouble, they made it out of wood. The Chachamim said to Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda, they did not make it out of wood. It looked like wood. Mishom Raya. It was Shpudim Shel Barzel. They had made it out of these, a Shpud is literally a spit. Because remember, you can weld it together if it's not made out of gold. So this was made of Shpudim Shel Barzel, and they were Chipum Baba'ats. The reason that it looked like wood is because the iron would have really looked awful, would have gotten rusty. So they covered that over with tin plate. So it was tin plated. And when tin weathers a bit, it starts looking woody. So because of that, people made the mistake of thinking that it was wood, but it wasn't wood. And after they got richer, they substituted a more valuable metal, and they made it out of kesev. And then when they finally were able to afford a real menorah, they went ahead and they made the way the menorah was supposed to be asa'um shel zahav. Anyway, so we've got now 2 brises that make it very clear that according to Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda, the deal is that eitz is kosher, and therefore you have to be careful not to make a 7-branched menorah of eitz in your home, because that would be similar to the menorah of the Beis HaMikdash, and that shows that your braisa, Rav Papa, is wrong. So delete that braisa. Okay, let's now talk about the actual measurements piece by piece. So let's see how this adds up. Omar Shmuel mismeid es Saba. So if this is the Saba we suspect he might be, he ought to know what the menorah looked like, so we could certainly take Elion Novi's word for it, right? By the way, you might notice that if you make things out of spits, they don't really look much like a menorah. They look more like a garden rake. And that's the truth. All these pictures of the menorah, according to most of the Rishonim, are just romantic notions that the Romans had, and that have nothing to do with the menorah in the Beis HaMikdash, and that the menorah in the Beis HaMikdash would have looked too strange to Romans, so they didn't make a picture of that. But the menorah in the Beis HaMikdash was not a candelabrum with the rounded pieces coming up from the side. Where that comes from, who knows? But there's no real marker for it anywhere. In at least all the Rishonim depict a menorah, which is shkudim. It's sticks that are coming out, going up, and does not look at all like a candelabrum. You know,
but really, all the sites we found in Israel, going back to the old shuls, all have the image of the candelabra with the curve throughout the whole land, the floors, and we've got a shul.
Yeah, I know them. I know them. You don't have to describe them.
So how come they all had them. Vision? I mean, everybody had, even people that saw it would have been alive and seen the menorah would have.
I don't know that the artists remember that. All of that artistry is an awful lot of Greek imagery and an awful lot of Roman imagery and an awful lot of other. I mean, they're artistic depictions that it's not clear at all that they were even made by Jews. Even the lettering looks like a goy that was copying Hebrew letters like you find today in this Chinese stuff. It always looks a little strange, if it's artistic. But I don't know. I don't know that we can bring a raya from there. But anyway, we don't see any raya in the Torah at all that I know of, that it was curved. What was Reb Barnea going to tell us?
We want to refine what Reb Alon is saying. Shlomo Mustayevzal told me that various things in his collection were from Beit Sheni. And already in Beit Sheni, and even on multiple objects, it shows the menorah in four different ways consistently. And then in these later shuls, like in Susia, some of them, in Susia, the menorah is depicted two different ways. Well, some of them, one with knobs, one curved, one straight. I don't have it in my head right now, but there's mamish. And you always have to tell the Lubavitchers, yes, one of the four is like the Rambam. Don't worry. But and there's the difference, showing it in different ways, and even on the same object more than one way. If it's correct, it goes back to Beit Sheni. It's a mystery. Rebbe's giving an answer that it's free artistry, but why would they show it in four different ways, even in the time, if it's correct, even in the time when the menorah is there?
Because a menorah has a romantic association with the way menorahs were used from the Malchus. I mean, you know, so this is the way that an extremely rich home or castle has a menorah. There's nowhere on earth that you'll find a menorah that looks like the menorah of the Beis HaMikdash. If it was really, as Rashi says in Chumash, was really Balak's son. So it didn't evoke this sense that people had of what a menorah is supposed to be. And that menorah, if you think about it, you relate entirely differently to a menorah that looks like the menorah of the Beis HaMikdash than you do to a candelabrum. Totally different. The candelabrum has in it a religious evocation. It reminds you of the church, not of the Beis HaMikdash. But when you look at the stripped down reality of things that are searching and are extending their hands up to the heavens, so to speak, you get a completely different sense than you do with the candelabrum. So it makes sense that the artistic depiction does not really have room. It's not, remember, artistry is not just about, realism, certainly in those days. We're not interested in realism. We're interested in giving you over a sense of what the thing is. So to our religious minds, in a world of Avodah Zarah, a candelabrum is a very powerful symbol, and the menorah is not. It's actually almost an anti-religious symbol in the sense that it strips it away, the candelabrum. So it makes much more sense in the Beis HaMikdash. And it makes perfectly good sense to me that if I were an artist, you know, I wouldn't do it that way. It's the same idea of turning David into a Greek idol, you know. It's like it's your aesthetic ideas being. Thank you, David. We have our own David. So it's your aesthetic ideas that are going to be put into whatever artistic forms you want. I mean, we might as well conclude that David was an Orel because the Greek guy who made him, that's his idea of a perfect Jewish form, right? I mean, so, you know, it's the same thing is true of a candelabrum. It's an Orel candelabrum. Okay. Anyway, so let's
But at the core of it, Rebbe is saying that even if it was a Jewish artist, and even if it's from the time of the Second Base of Mikdash, like the mosaic from the floor that was found in the Herodian Quarter, I still have artistic license. I'm not trying to make technical drawings.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I don't know. Do we have anywhere? There are places where there are technical drawings, I think, right? Where Kalim were taken apart. And that's about the Shulchan. The different parts of the Shulchan are depicted. Not as a whole shulchan, but I think that's because of the shulchan that doesn't have the vaguest resemblance to a table. So it wasn't even looked at as a table. I wanted to put a table there. Okay. Anyway, so let's get back to this menorah. Omesh Womesh made a Saba. Let's take a look at that menorah, break it up into its actual proportions and see how it all adds up. So you've got 18 tvachim in total that the menorah is, okay, so it's approximately, let's say, 6 feet tall, 5 feet tall, whatever, something like that. And let's start at the bottom. So, haraglayim, and remember, yerecha pircha. That means that bottom, that yarech, that thigh, that part that carries the weight of the menorah, has a perach attached to it. Now, that bottom piece, which Rashi says was hollow, wasn't solid, but it was hollow, like you find in the fancy menorahs, but it was broad. It was 3 tvachim high together with the perach that was on it. And then you have 2 plain metallic tvachim, nothing on there. So we're up to 5 tvachim high. Then we have 1 tefach. In that 1 tefach, there was a gevia and a kaftar and a perach. Now, this is strange, as Tosis points out, because none of the other cases that we have of kaftareha, peracheha, gevieha have to all fit 3 within 1 tefach. They were, what Tosis says over here, which is not really accurate, and he's just sort of essentially what you have over there is 1 tefach per thing. So you've got the kaftorim were certainly 1 tefach. If you make the cheshbon as we're going to go, so the kaftorim that the kanim were coming out of were 1 tefach apiece. So Tosfos says, okay, so then, I mean, the prachim could be 1 tefach apiece. The gviim could be 1 tefach apiece. Over here, you're providing only 1 tefach for all of these 3 things. So how is that? So, I mean, Rashi learns over here that it was different than the normal gviim, prachim, and kaftorim. And that, in fact, what you had over here was a different shape coming out of the menorah on different sides. So you had on that tefach, you had a flower coming out on one side, and you had on another third of it, you had a gevia sticking out on the other side, and on another third, you had a kaftar. So basically, you fit them all around the round koneh. The other obvious way that other Rishonim learn it is that you had them one inside the other. So the gevia extended around the kaftor, and then the top of the kaftor stuck out, and on top of that, it expanded into a flower shape. But in any event, it was certainly different than the normal kaftorim or the gevim, which were more separated. But here we had 1 tefach that allowed you all 3 things. It had to have a gevia and a kaftor and a perach. Now, then we've got another 2 tefachim that are, again, without anything on them. And then you have a full tefach with a kaftar. Now, out of that kaftar, you had the shnei kanim yotzi mimena. So you had the diagonal sticking out, plus 1 coming out from the top, 1 coming out from the bottom, because you extended on. So as we talked last night, these kaftarim have 4 extensions. Each one of them, these 3 kaftorim. So they also have the 2 coming out one from each side, plus they have the base, plus they have the extension going up further. So that's one tefach, shnei kanim yotzi mineno, all the way going up to the top. Echad elach, ve'echad elach, v'nim shachim v'olim, k'neged gov ha'shel menorah. They continue to go all the way up. Doesn't say anything about curving to go up. They're nim shachim v'olim, or as Rashi says in Chumash, ba'alachson, they go up on a diagonal, which is also mashma, that they don't curve. And they go up, k'neged gov ha'shel menorah. Then you have another one tefach that is blank. So far we're up to nine tefachim when we have these new two, the two tefachs between the kaftar and its kanim, plus one tefach that's halak. And then we have the tefach, the halak, that brings us 10 tefach kaftar v'shnei kanim yotzim mimeno. Echad Elach, the Echad Elach, that continue on to the top. And then we've got another blank space. And then we have another Tefach for a Kaftor, Shlekanim Yotzi Mimeno, Echad Elach, the Echad Elach, which now covers all of the Kanim. And then we've got another Tvachaim Chalak. And that leaves us three Tvachim till the 18. So that equaled 15. And that was three tefachim in which we have to fit three gliim, one kaftar, and a perach. So obviously, Tosis couldn't really have meant to think that each thing is provided a tefach, because, I mean, there's no way that three tefachim will be enough for the shlosha gliim plus a kaftar plus a perach. So there we have a little bit space, more space than we had, obviously, way more space than we had in the one tefach. But over here also, we're going to have a little bit of incorporating one inside of the other. What do these gviim look like? Well, a gviim looked like the modern Kosot Alexandrian. They look like those fancy drinking cups that they manufacture in Alexandria and Mitzrayim. So they were like long, elongated cups that spread out on top. The kaftorim, well, those look like the kretim tapuchim. So they were decorative things that they used apparently in Crete. Maybe perhaps Barnea knows some kind of pictures of such things, no? And the prachim lamayim danim? Well, the prachim look like the classic flowers that are on top of the columns, that often when they come up, the top of the column it supports things looking like an expanded flower. So it's decorative. So anyway, if you add this all up, so what do you get? So you get 22 gviim, because you've got your three gviim also, which we haven't mentioned over here, but we learned it when we learned that today we went over the menorah, and it said, Shlosha gviim mishukadim bekanah echad kaftor v'ferach. Shlosha gviim mishukadim bekanah echad kaftor v'ferach. Ken l'sheshet hakanim. So that gives us three gviim times six. That's the, besides what's in the middle. So that gives us 18. And then we were told that on the menorah Zahav Tahor, it also says, Givieha kaftoreha uferacheha, but we learned that we have those Gibiya Kaftorea that are repeated. It says Beferish in the next Pasuk, the menorah itself had Arba'a Gevi'im. So those Arba'a Gevi'im, where were those Arba'a Gevi'im? Well, the upper three Tvachim, remember, had space for Shlosha Gevi'im. And then we had that sort of truncated Gevi'a that had to fit in that one tefach. That was the fourth one. So that means altogether, you've got the 18 of the kanim and another four, because it says refresh, arba agviim. Okay, so 4 and 18 is 22. That's the total number of the viim. How many kaftorim do we have? So kaftorim, we have akadasar, and prachim, we have tisha. And we'll go through those in a moment, but we already understand. Kaftoreo uferafeha. So that gives us two kaftorim, two prafim on the middle piece. And we also have yirechao pircha, which gives us one additional perach that we weren't counting before. So where were those Prachim? Well, one of those was the truncated Perach that was inside the Tefach, and one was the Perach that was on top of the three Tefachim that were left open. And then we also had the Perach that was on the bottom together with Yurecha U'Pircha that we haven't counted over here. So that gives us also all these Kaftarim Ma'akvim and the Prachim or Ma'akvim Zeh, and the Gviin and the Kaftarim and the Prachim are all Ma'akvim each other. So it turns out, if you recall the way that we had structured the whole menorah, so we've got 22 Gviim, and we're going to go through the way that we come out with those numbers. We've got 22 of these Gviim, and we've got 11 of these Kaftorim, which are the pommels, as Rashi says, and we've got 9 of these flowers, Prachim. So all of these Gviim, all 22 Gviim of Ma'akvim Zetze, if we have a golden menorah, we said it's only if it's made out of gold that all of this is Ma'akiv. So if you've got a golden menorah, you've got to have all 22 of these Gviim, and they're going to be Ma'akiv, one another. And if you don't have all of your 11 Kaftorim, it's going to be Ma'akiv, the Kashis, and the menorah. And if you don't have the 9 prachim, they're all ma'akvim zetzeh. And not only that, but the loss of any one of these sidorim makes the others completely puzzle as well. So gviim, kaftarim, uprachim, ma'akvim zetzeh. So we need all 42 of these things. So let's see how this adds up. Bishlam gviim esrim v'shnayim. How do we come out with 22 gviim? Well, we had b'menorah arba'a gviim. So you'll remember we had those 3 gviim that were on the top. They were placed there together with the Kaftor v'Ferach, which was the top 3 Tvachim that allowed us that amount of space for all of that. And then that gave us 3. And then there was that one Gavia that was put together in one Tefach with the Kaftor and the Perach, which was 2 Tvachim above the base, remember? So that gave us 4 in the actual body of the menorah. And then we had on each one of the kanim, as it says in the pasuk, that we have the each one of the kanim has itself 3. So if we add that up, we come out menorah arba'a gviim, and we have shlosha gviim shukadim b'kaneh achad. So we've got on all 6 of these kanim, besides the 4 on the body of menorah. So that gives us 6 times 3 is 18, plus the 4 on the body of the menorah. That's very simple. We come out with 22 gviim. Okay. And I understand how we've got the kaftorim. So we've got, at first let's add up these gviim. We've got the 4 on the gufa menorah, arba di day, and we've got the tmana yisrei, the 18 of the kanim, put them all together, gives us 22. Now, I also could figure out how we come out with kaftorim, acharasa, because the kaftorim have actually 2, remember, besides the 3 that are connected to the kanim, and that 2 kanim come out from each one of them, but we still have the other kaftorim, 2 of the kaftorim, remember, because it says kaftoreha. So what are those 2 kaftorim? That's the kaftor on top that was after the 3 gviim, kaftor vaferach, all within those top 3. And then we had that kaftor, the small kaftor, that was all put together in that one tefach, which was 2 tefachim up from the base. So that gives us 2 kaftorim. And then I understand that in each one of the kaftorim, since it says shlosha gviim kaftor v'ferach, so shlosha gviim kaftor v'ferach means that you've got on each one of these kanim, 1 kaftor and 1 ferach. So multiply 6 kanim gives you 6 kaftorim, and that would be, so far, we've talked about 8. And then we've got the 3 kaftorim, which are the large kaftorim out of which the kneya menorah extend to the sides. So each one of them has vikaftor, 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 plus another, that's the lashon of the pasuk, in which the pasuk repeats vikaftor, etakashnei hakanim mimena, and so on. So that's repeated 3 times, gives us 3 plus 8 is 11, achadasan. But where did you get 9 prachim? I only add up 8. We've got the prachim that was piracheha. That's 2 prachim on the body of the menorah itself. And we also have kaftor v'ferach for each one of those kanim. Remember, shlosha gviim kaftor v'ferach. So that gives us the total prachim, 6 on the kanim, kaftor v'ferach, and the 2 kaftoreha on the menorah, one of which was on the top, that was completely stuck with the other 3 gviim in the kaftor within that top 3 tefachim, and one was towards the bottom in that one tefach that contained a kaftor and a perach and a gaviyah. But where did the 9th one come from? I only add up 8. Omer of Shalman, you forgot one. Ad yirecha, ad pircha mikshayi. This is the one in Baha'alotecha. And that means that as you went down to the yorech, to that base, there was a perach right on top of the base that formed part of the transition from the base to the kaneha menorah. And that is precisely how we get exactly the number we were looking for, all of it to be mikshayi.